I wanted to do three different things tonight, if we have time. And we will just see how this all unfolds. If not, the first one is good enough. And that is, I would like us to start with doing like a keyword search on the, in regards to Sangha, in regards to community. Because for those of you who came in at the regular time, before the 6 o'clock sit, there was an all-Sangha meeting, and I was here for the summaries, and it was a very productive meeting, very rich about what is the future direction here of the Sangha and all these different possibilities. And this brings up the very idea as to, well, what are we doing in Sangha? What are we doing in community? Community always has its challenges, always challenges in community. So don't feel as though you're a lone ranger if you find it challenging at times. Through the organization as a whole, the form of the organization, certain individuals, and so on and so forth. Every single person here has that same experience. And community also, as long as human history has been, as far as we can tell, there has always been advantage to community. That, in fact, our very strength as a species is our ability to function in community. That can be reduced in a biological motivation way that takes any mystery out of it, or it can be opened up to the mystery. That's so mysterious that human beings have this capacity of great coordination among the group. Great coordination. And our meaning comes from a collective myth, a collective sense of what is purpose, what is to be cared about, and how, in terms of our tradition, how liberation of mind, heart occurs. And so here we are, sitting in community this moment. Many of you have been here a number of times. Some of you are here for the first time. But what are we doing? What is this? And I'm wanting to do this as keywords. And I did this for myself and had a very good time, I must say, doing this as a keyword. So I will throw mine in afterwards, but let's just have some keywords, just single words.
Support.
Support.
Connection.
Connection.
Safety.
Safety.
Synchrony.
What? Synchrony. Six.
Synchrony.
Synchrony, yes.
Love.
Practice. Love, practice.
Diversity.
Diversity.
Variety.
Beloved.
What was the one over here?
Beloved.
Beloved. Beloved. Did I say that? Is that what you said? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Encouragement.
Wow.
Healing.
Mutuality.
Mm. Like-minded.
Peace. Sure.
Okay, this is enough for now. So, I'll just give a few of mine that some are quite overlapping. I had caring, sharing, growing, reliable, unexpected, possibility, purpose, open, commitment, warmth, isolation. Because we know the isolation of being sometimes in community, right? I've been in a number of organizations where I felt isolated in the midst, but nonetheless was glad to be there for one reason or another. And there can be opposites in community where we feel opposite someone else or opposite something. There's all sorts of opposites. That's part of the diversity. If you're going to have diversity, you're going to have all sorts of opposites. Tolerance. Sameness. You find like-minded people. You find sameness of all sorts. Sometimes you don't like that sameness because you don't feel that same. And friendship, acceptance, wholeness, letting go, all these different words. And all that, I thought this was an excellent list of words. So the question then becomes, why is it that we have this kind of pull back kind of relationship with so many communities, including this one? So that we're reluctant to invest beyond a certain level. And that level may be just showing up occasionally, or it may be showing up every week. But we have this reluctance in regard to community. And this is true everywhere. This isn't true in a particular sangha. It's not true particularly in Buddhist sanghas. It's true everywhere, in all sorts of community organization where there's a pulling in and out. And we have the usual things about, oh, I don't have time. I've got these other interests I want to do with my time. But let's go underneath that. What is it? What might it be that makes us, with our kind of ambivalence in regards to community? I'm really curious to what people might say. So not long things, just a sentence or two. Someone make a suggestion.
Well, you mentioned isolation. I think that the isolation can be a threat, feeling of unsafeness, and feeling that you're helpless.
So the fear of isolation or maybe rejection. Yes, that's good.
There's always a tension between the needs of the community and the needs of the self, or at least the perceived needs mm-hmm. of the self, the creation of the self versus the
community. So tension between the needs of the self and needs of community. Good.
The trauma, I was going to say drama, but I say the trauma of leaving the house, of knowing. Once I'm here, it's
going to
be much better.
The trauma of leaving the house, this reluctance to just sort of leave the momentum of your life. Is that what you're saying?
It's more of a, I don't know, kind of pulling in.
Pulling in.
Not wanting to drive down the hill.
Not wanting to drive down the hill.
But knowing, they call this my Sunday night medicine.
Like, no, yeah, that this is your Sunday night medicine. That's that tension too, thank you.
Because it gets me to, it keeps me going through the week. So. Mm-hmm.
Protection of identity.
Protection of identity.
The challenge of other people's opinions.
Challenge of other people's opinions.
Coming to an organization of whatever kind with certain expectations, and then it doesn't always live up to its press releases.
Yes, does it? Okay.
Boundary issues.
Boundary issues.
How to foster a social culture that prizes respect and listening and rejects gossip, slander, and disrespect.
So some tension there between the disrespect and gossip versus respect and a kind of discipline and commitment. Thank you.
Fear of making a commitment to the sangha and then not being able to keep it.
So fear of a commitment and then not being able to keep it.
Good old judging and comparing.
Good old judging and comparing, yes. See, now fixing fits in with community because that gets you all involved, right? We fix it types, that's the way, our way in.
To do for everybody, and what about just physical stresses or irritations arising as we're from the fear of fatigue or the fear of pain or the fear of...
So something's going to go wrong, it's going to be unpleasant in some way, or it could be... And
when I sit
yeah, can I sit through this? Is it worth it? Yes.
To be faced with the paradox of coming to a community to move inwards.
The paradox of coming to community to move inwards. That's an interesting one.
So an ambivalence about then you'll want too much from me.
They'll like want too much from me. Yeah.
They want to get a piece of me. Like, yeah. I want some more.
Yeah, they want too much from me.
A lack of reciprocity that I'm willing to invest this, but really what am I getting in return?
A lack of reciprocity. I'm willing to invest this, but what will I get in return?
It's difficult.
It's difficult in how?
It's difficult. Well, I was thinking of that today. So I like to be involved in sangha, obviously. And yet it points out to me... God, did I do that again? Wrong speech again? Judgment again? Mm-hmm. It's very, particularly, yeah, it's difficult.
A friend of mine who's a Dharma teacher and down in Long Beach, California, whom I've known for a long time, His aunt used to say that she was going to go out and mangle with the public. And when you said that, that's what came to mind, this feeling of mangling, you know, with the public at the Sangha. So, yes, that's a nice teacher, by the way, down in Long Beach, named Victor Berg. So, yes.
Yes, my desire of creating the new.
The desire to create the new? Yeah. And Bill, did you have one? You've done that yours? Okay, what is?
Well, sort of a formula I can't figure out. It's sort of a dance between expectations and fantasy and the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, the hardness of the real world and goals and discipline.
So the fantasy versus the hardness, goals versus disappointment. It's very helpful to have all this in the room with us. We'll let all of these feelings sit here and be in Sangha with us. Sometimes I feel as though we believe that we believe we've got to have this super positive attitude to do community, unless we absolutely have to do community. And it certainly is nice when we have a super positive attitude. But for someone like myself, who is much more social in a role than not in a role, it is very difficult for me to be in community because it's too much social for me. I would rather be home alone, just being very self-revealing about that. And yet, over and over again, I have chosen to be in community. Sometimes because there was something specific that I was particularly hoping to receive through that community, but oftentimes because I supported the underlying values of that community, even though it was not, a lot of the part of being the community was not particularly rewarding to me. So I had made a switch without realizing I had made the switch, and I was thinking about all this today in regards to tonight. There was some point where I started to be less concerned about what I was going to get out of versus where I could give that would be of some use, that where I could give that supported my values, my interest. And that was a very useful thing, that switch that happened. Why it happened, I don't know exactly when it happened. I didn't have time to go back and figure out. But it has been a very useful thing to me. And so I participate in community in support more than receive. You might think about this, each of us might think about this in terms of how do we feel about this? How would it feel to us to take that attitude, to support rather than receive? Might work, might not. You might find that in the supporting, that is the receiving. That the privilege of supporting this attitude, this offering of support is the gift, because the heart is opened, because the mind is outside its self-reference tendency, that is the gift. Yesterday at the Care Providers Day, anybody here from the Care Providers? 1, 2, 3, 4. One of the interesting things of the day was when I talked about I was talking about the various traps that we get into around our care providing activity. And one of the ones that seemed to really resonate in the room was when I was talking about gratitude and how we get trapped in our expectation, our demand for gratitude, and how this is really completely wrong turned, as that when we make an offering, and I call it an offering and not a gift, when we make an offering, that it is the offering is complete in itself. It does not need gratitude to complete it. And that when we get caught in the gratitude, we're moving from an offering to an exchange. I will give you this. I will offer this support, and you give me your gratitude. It's wonderful when we receive gratitude. And as human beings, we want to cultivate an appreciation that leads to gratitude, because that's wonderful for us in the role of receiving an offering. Even if it's an offering we don't all that much want, that somebody cared enough to make the offering, that's the real value in terms of the heart connection. Now, maybe if something we really need, getting what we really need is also a secondary value. But the motivation is all in the heart. The exchange, the community is all in the heart exchange, if that makes sense to you. And so the one way to look at an offering is that it is a privilege to get to make the offering. It's a privilege to get to be generous. It's a privilege. And one of the prices we pay for this privilege is the lack of gratitude. Usually, that's too much, oftentimes when we make an offering, it turns out there's some secondary cost. Not only is there not gratitude, there's some secondary cost that comes with the offering, you know. You loan your friend money, and then they come and say, I need more money from you. All sorts of complications like that can come up. Rather than being cynical or bitter because of that, it is understanding that this is the nature of the human mind when it's not found liberation, to get entangled, to get into clinging and wanting. And so in finding freedom from demanding gratitude, we're finding liberation. It is a way of cultivating liberation, cultivating letting go. In the same way, if the values that are occurring here in the Sangha are your values in a general way, not in every specific way, but in a general way, if you are getting to come here and be with like-minded people, you're coming here, you're being on a committee, you're bringing food, you're greeting people at the door, you're putting out the chairs, you're hanging up, our Buddhas. These are offerings that you are making. The offering is the reward. As soon as we look for that extra thing, then we are moving into an exchange, not just an offering. There is nothing wrong with exchanges. Marriages are based on exchanges. Friendships are based on exchanges. Nothing wrong with exchanges. But everything in life, every moment in life, every time period in your life in relation to any particular activity does not have to be based on an exchange. When we choose a one-way street, it's fine to go down a one-way street. But when we are forced into a one-way street, it doesn't feel so good. So I've said this to various organizations over the last 40 years. You do not want the generosity of your members to feel one way. There should be a generosity coming back to the members of your organization. If it's all one way, then that will create a kind of bitterness. There'll be a kind of everybody out for themselves feeling. So we don't want it to be one way, but we don't. In any given time, it's fine if we feel as though we're giving and we're not receiving, because in fact the giving is the receiving. So that's one reflection for you about this. It doesn't apply just to Sangha. Doesn't just apply to all Buddhist communities. It applies to all of your life, all of your relationships, whether your children, your significant other. It's a time when you're being to this clarity of our intention, the Sama Samkhapa of the Eightfold Path, the second aspect of the Eightfold Path. What is my intention here? Well, my intention is to make an offering. And then if I end up in community of some kind, if I end up in a two-way relationship with this, then I will continue. So that's the first level. The second aspect of this is that oftentimes we we miss the big offering, and we're looking for secondary offerings that are more personal to us. So getting to sit in meditation with like-minded people is a big give back. You know, would you be sitting at home at 6 o'clock? I suspect not. I suspect not. Would you get your medicine for the week if it wasn't for the existence of the Sangha? Maybe, maybe not. You know, a couple of drinks at the bar is not the same medicine. Not that there's that the drinks at the bar might be completely useless, but maybe of a very diminishing value. You know, so the not recognizing just the value of sitting, not recognizing the value that you're reminded of what you care about, not recognizing the value that even if someone that's speaking isn't doing the most stellar job you've ever heard of the Dharma, you're still sitting in the Dharma. The Dharma is good in the beginning, the middle, and the end. The Dharma is good even if it's lackluster in some way, even if it's going on for hours and hours. It's still the Dharma. Because in Southeast Asia, you know, they will. They'll go on for hours, you know, and hours and hours. So so it's to be awake to what we're really receiving. It's also, when we give, it's an opportunity to watch our minds act, to watch our minds cling, to watch our minds judge and compare. It's very interesting to watch that. This is one of the safer communities in which to watch your mind do its thing. Even if there's a little friction, it's a pretty safe place for friction. Nobody's going to throw anything at you. You know, there's not going to be a whole gang of people that ignore you. You know, it's a reasonably safe place for watching our minds do whatever it does. And it often, as someone said, serendipity, which I thought that was a very useful word, it offers all sorts of serendipity in terms of other human beings and also encountering information that could be quite important to you. That someone may say something in passing that really like gives you an idea or identifies for you what's been troubling you. So this willingness to be open in this way in regards to community. And with that, I want to just, you've talked about community afternoon, so I don't want to do too much of that, but anything to, any response to my comments about community or so forth?
I find it harder here, and I'm great with putting the chairs together all by myself, in community but doing my own thing. I find it harder sometimes. Can you say it better than I can?
No, I don't know.
Relating, working with people, sometimes I find it more difficult working with people here than in other groups.
In other groups. That can happen.
And maybe it's because I feel more vulnerable. That mm-hmm. could be. Maybe because I'm more conscious, like I said before, of my non-right speech, my non-skillfulness, or because the expectation, I don't know what it is, but sometimes for me, it's more difficult working with other people in Sangha than it is in other communities.
And that's difficult and an opportunity.
Yes.
It's both at once, and that's why you're still here, as you're saying, yes. And also, if we make that a practice, we could just practice being with the difficult. That would be one thing we could do. We could say, oh, I have trouble with right speech. I'm going to practice saying less and less. Because I'm not so social, and a number of situations that I have been in, I'm not in very many situations right now except in my leadership roles, I would hardly ever say anything. I was not one of the chatters, but I got to listen to the chatting. I liked hearing the chatting. That was fine with me. But I was able to, I could see my own at times my own needs of wanting to be related to that didn't occur. And then that too was something to practice with. So, and I would sometimes want the feeling I can think of in the dojo of cleaning the mat. After we'd do our practice sessions of 2 hours, and sometimes 3 hours, everybody was supposed to clean the mat, but usually, you know, 2 or 3 people clean the mat. I had a certain feeling about cleaning the mat, and I would have preferred that everybody had my feeling. You know, that was my strong preference. It would have made cleaning the mat more fun if everybody had my feeling. But that was just my preference. I understood that there was no reason that other people were supposed to feel the way I felt. Now, they had been better off, of course, if they would have. But that wasn't my business, you see. And so the letting go of that, the more I let loose, the more I had a part in cleaning the mat. I was more part of the dojo. As I let loose of my ideas, any fixed views about how it was supposed to be. Does that make sense to everyone? In Sangha, there's more awareness. There's more mindfulness. There's also sensitivity. And every group has its own kind of stylistic groups. And as we mingle more, we bump into stylistic groups. The more calm we are, the more letting go, the more we can roll with that.
On a similar note, I find in other groups, it's easier to walk away. If I don't agree.
Right.
In this group, I'm closely connected with enough people that if there's a disagreement, I have to at least pretend to be patient.
That's good. That's very good. I would reframe that slightly to say you're practicing being patient. It may not be very strong, but at least you're practicing. So, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you for that one, too.
I think, to play off of what Vita just said, I think the vulnerability piece is kind of big, too. At least it is for me. This space is sort of that more sacred space, that supposed to be safer space, and I'm trying to show up and be more authentic. Well, that can be really scary for me.
Yeah.
And it's that intimacy and opening up more than I would in most groups. Because most groups, I can play a role much more easily, or I can... You know, I can jump in a leadership position, or I can do something funny, or whatever. Here, I'm trying to be more authentic, and so it is. It's opening the heart more, which is a little scarier and has a little bit more potential for hurt. So.
Thank you. So more vulnerability, more potential for heart. I'm just saying this for the microphone, just in case.
I agree with what he said, but I think it's really good practice for the other areas of my life because it teaches me to be more authentic and not have to, you know, try to be funnier. Yeah. I still do, but... the other thing I was going to say was that I really liked what you said about showing up here, even because sometimes I come when you come, and sometimes I don't come when other people are teaching. I know, you know what I mean. And I think that if I understood what you said that it's the Dharma, no matter who's teaching or what the experience is, and that was really good fodder for me because it is. It's a sacred experience no matter who teaches it, really.
Right. Well, and so it's a sacred experience no matter who's teaching, and that she tended to not show up when I wasn't here and to show up when I was here. And this is a community-wide pattern that I've really, asked. That's the one thing I've ever asked of this Sangha, is that you show up when I'm not here. That's the only thing I've ever asked of any of you individually in that way. In part, it's because of this. It's just bad manners to not show up. And in the Western tradition, in the Greek culture, the hearth was everything. There was a huge emphasis on hosting the stranger. Many reasons for that in terms of group cooperation. All this, I won't go into some sort of academic analysis of that. But it is in our Western culture that we be good hosts. And one way you're a good host is you're there when someone comes to visit. So I really do encourage that, and I thank you for saying that, because yes, indeed, as I was saying, you are always in the Dhamma. It doesn't matter who's here. And many times, they might have something more interesting or relevant to say about your life than what I have to say. So we don't even know.
On some days when I'm unable to be here, I frequently
schedule my sit exactly when you're going to start the meditation, and I meditate on the other side of the room of Marin with everyone's mind in mind.
How great! So she's, when she starts sitting at the same time we start sitting, so she's sitting with us. I really like that. I'm going to stop with this now because I do want to. I feel like the rooms, that we've gotten sort of on the same page here. I will do this again at some point. I am encouraging this kind of a individual exploration, and then in your various groups to do more of this kind of an exploration. You are. I say that coming in from outside today, I can say we are. It is a there's really a fine quality to everyone here. This is I tell people all around the country about you actually, and how nice you are, and how friendly you are, and how caring you are. Live up to your. So but by now, this is actually quite a number of people that have heard all about you in this way, and not a small number have come here on various evenings, and you've gotten to know them in various ways and various times. So I think this is worth an extra consideration than maybe some of you have given it about the role you might be willing to play and to put the foot in the water a little more. For those of you who are quite active, I would urge you to be really alert to having someone be received when they step forward in some way to be a little more active. It can be very uncomfortable when you put yourself forward and if you're not well received. And I think it's very unskillful to ever have differences have to come up in the group. I am for differences coming up one-on-one and not in the group. Because that, for everyone else in the group, gets then gun-shy about that. So something's taken away from the group. And, I'm part of these various teaching communities, and we certainly have our differences. And when it works well is when we do those differences one-on-one and as opposed to trying to do it all in the group. Switching completely now to a whole nother topic. As you know, Brooke's daughter, Brooke was such a vital part of our community for so many years and always sat right here and was such a help to me personally and such a dear friend of mine. Her daughter, Emilia, died a few weeks ago and of cancer, and she went through quite a period of time of having this cancer that started in her colon and spread, and she got her cancer at the time she was pregnant, and it was not caught because of that somehow, the fact that something to do with around the pregnancy that they just didn't catch it because could have been a very different outcome had they caught it earlier. And I met Emilia when she was 20 years old and going to University of Colorado in Boulder, and she died at 42. So we were friends for 22 years, and of course she's two generations younger than me in that way, and I got to watch this young woman grow up, and we had our own separate friendship from Brooke and I's friendship, which was a nice thing. And I was her advisor in various situations in her life. And she was a very spirited young woman who drew very little attention to herself. But when they were putting her ashes in the ocean, they did it with a canoe. And they said, anybody that wants to come in their canoe or in a canoe can attend this ceremony. Hundreds of canoes appeared for this ceremony. She did not want a funeral, she wanted a celebration. So after that, there was a celebration. Some 800 people came to this celebration. People flew in people that her mother didn't even know flew in for this celebration. And it was it's such an example of how a person can be so important in a community and not be known in any kind of a, quote, big role way, but is actually part of the cogs that makes that community stay together, can be playing a very important role. We, you know, social scientists can now identify people in various ways. They have ways to measure all of that now. So this is a well-known phenomena, but we forget it. We don't really take it. We don't really honor it maybe as much as we should. And that can be true in this community as well, that you can be holding the community together, but nobody is thinking of you as the glue because you just are the glue. Many of you know my friend John Levy, and have become friends with him. John had lived here in Marin for many years, now lives over in Berkeley. I have always viewed John Levy as one of those people and was very, very inspired by the quiet way he did that. And so you may not even know that that's the way you are. If you're just being available in whatever ways you can be available, that's enough. You don't have to make a story out of it or label or anything like this. It's just possible to be that. In the same way of as going through this process of Gamaliel, I've now a friend and student, actually two of them, some of you may know, Gordon Pierman and Kathy Woods, who they've been in various programs, various retreats. They have a sangha in Nashville where they teach in Nashville, Tennessee. And they're very, very dear people. I have gone down there and taught at their sangha, and we've gone off and held retreats at a local university there, residential retreats, at least twice, if not three times. And Kathy has, for years, fought cancer. And they've said, you know, this may not work out this time, three different times before. But this time, it's come up again, and she has entered the hospice program. And we spent just a beautiful hour and a half on the phone earlier this week talking about how to do this process of dying, how to do dying as practice. And I did spend an hour and a half with Gordon on the phone talking about all this from his perspective and all. And Gordon was telling me about how in their sangha, how everybody wants to come and be around Kathy because she is so absolutely beautiful right now. Just like she's transparent. She is one of the most lovely human beings I've ever encountered anywhere. And she's so transparent at this stage of her life. And I say this in part to remind us all of the heavenly messengers of old age, sickness, and death. That we aren't doing this to somehow come out with more pleasant moments. We're doing this in terms of finishing the arc of an experience that began when we were born. As the Venerable Sumedho has said, being born is a death sentence. Being born is a death sentence. We're in the tension of the opposites. People talked about tension. We're in the tension of the opposites of life and death from the beginning. And one way to understand the arc of a life is that we resolve that tension through our mindfulness, through our exploration, through our meaning, whatever our tradition. I mean, we could resolve it through prayer, we could resolve it through belief, whatever. But this is a suggested opposites to be resolved in some way. The pain and pleasure of life, that the Buddha called the worldly winds of gain and loss, pain and pleasure, fame and ill repute, praise and blame, all of these opposites. And so it is with all of us. And maybe at times we need to remember this more. And this would be a benefit to us. It might motivate our practice more. It might free us from this tyranny of Vedana, Vedana being the second of the Satipatthanas, the arising of pleasant and unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And in the untrained, the unawaked mind, that arising of pleasant and unpleasant tends to run the show. It tends to affect our mood, what we think, how we interpret our experience. We interpret our experience based on pleasant or unpleasant. That is not a very sound way to be interpreting experience. Much of the most valuable things that I have done in my whole life were not particularly pleasant to do. But if I look back at my life, I would choose those things over a lot of pleasant things I had. I had a lot of pleasant experiences around food that just mean nothing to me. Food was not a big thing to me in that way. That's not the meaning of life to me. Maybe for some people it's more associated with the essence of life. I can totally respect that. And something that's valuable to me might not be valuable to you. So, for instance, having seen, heard, read art in various forms, that's been valuable to me. It might not be valuable to someone else. I am glad to have seen beauty in life. I'm glad to have seen beauty. But what matters to us, whatever age you are, you say, okay, I want to choose based on my values, which I call response rather than reactive. Pleasant and unpleasant are by definition reactive. When we're acting according to those, it's the puppet on the string. Some of you heard me say so many times. It's just a reactive mind state. The responsive mind state of the Eightfold Path is based on wise understanding what we really care, our intention, the sama sankappa, what really matters to us in this way. And so, the gift of those who are close to us, or people people we're close to, when they experience someone close to them dying, the gift to us, their last gift in some way, is reminding us of what matters. So do we receive that gift or do we fail to receive that gift in that way? And it doesn't have to be some big thing, I'm going to sit 4 hours a day. We don't have to make it more. We make it something. We make it something. Starting from where we are right now, we make it something. We make it something important to us in some way. If we fail to make it important to us, we are missing the opportunity of that gift. The more we have made that important to us, the more we will affect others around us now all the way through to that final moment in a way that will prepare them, help them resolve this opposite of life and death. So once again, we come back to community. We're tied into others. Others are tied into us. We are doing this together alone. Or you could say we're doing it alone together, if you like it better that way. For those who really have a kind of a burden of feeling the isolation, the aloneness, this is really a worthwhile point to get. We're all alone. Some people are more aware of it than others, but we're all doing it alone. And we're all doing it together. So it's alone together. This is the reconciliation of the opposites of our individual consciousness in that way. You cannot understand that using logic. You can only open your mind and get it. You can only open your mind, maybe I should say mind heart more accurately. So I'm just pausing and being with Brooke for a moment here. Pausing and being with Gordon and Kathy. Art's very close to Gordon. And being with Gordon and Kathy for a moment. Kathy gave me permission to talk with you this evening. Permission to, actually quite specific, to be quite specific, which I may be at some other time about things, which I really appreciated her generosity in that. So, from this wide question about community to our very role in community in relation to life and death and our own liberation, down to I will come back to this later, but down to, you know, I just don't want to do that. I'm not going to go on. I'm going to stop right here. It's too much. Instead, I'm going to read a poem that I haven't read in many years. This is by Stanley Kunitz, who was twice our poet laureate, and he wrote this when he was, I think, 85 or something like this, maybe older than 85. And it's a reflection on what is life about. And it's called The Layers. I have walked through many lives. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own. And I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides, from which I struggle not to stray. This is a way of relating to our lives in the truth of anicca and anatta, that there are these principles that we connect moment to moment by our values. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I again gather my strength to proceed on my journey. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling towards the horizon and the slow fires trailing from the abandoned campsites over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true affections, and my tribe is scattered. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. Yet I turn. I turn exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go. And every stone on the road precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered and I roamed through wreckage, a nimbus-clouded voice directed me. Live in the layers, not on the litter. Live in the layers, not on the litter. Though I lack the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter in my book of transformations is already written. I am not done with my changes. I am not done with my changes. We come to Sangha as a place to empower ourselves in regard to our changes, we empower ourselves to find the strength to go forward in the journey towards a peaceful mind, a sense of well-being, a liberated mind and heart, a way of skillfully living in community and with ourselves where we do not cause harm to ourselves or another. This is our purpose. Our journey is not over. Our book of changes is not, our changes are not done. Our book of transformations is still being written. Do we want to show up in a conscious, mindful way? Compassionate mindfulness, as you've heard me say so much in the last 2 or 3 years, I've switched from mindfulness to compassionate mindfulness. Do we want to show up with compassionate mindfulness and our intentions ever more clear in such a way that we will have wisdom and love? Or is it just one more thing that would be nice, but that's not as important as some other things in our life? Our choice, and we each make it day by day, moment by moment, in this moment, what's important. In planning this week and thinking about this week and thinking about this day and this season, and or do we take vacation? Do we go on retreat? Do we come on Sunday night? Or do we go to a movie? It's all legitimate choice. I'm not saying what we choose. I do encourage us to think about what we choose in this larger context. And insofar as the Dharma is important, insofar as having some place to be reminded is important to you, how do you support what is important? Let's sit for a moment.